avatars in our world today. You find so many people who are claiming to be avatars. Now, why is this happening? You know, one may say, you know, this is a speculation. And I kind of stick my neck out in making such a speculation. But at least one way of looking at it is exactly what he's talking about. They have some experience, some realization which is high, and some part of the untransformed nature begins thinking, I am the, you know, divine, I am the son of God, I am the special chosen one, etc., etc. That translates itself into the idea of an avatar. If the nature was fully transformed, there would have been much greater clarity in understanding where one truly stands in the spiritual rung, ladder.
Yeah, that sounds, I mean, quite true.
Now, there is another side to it as well. And that is the reification of this terminology by people who have made it too simple. You know, this is also something that has arisen over time, in that there is a certain kind of sense that the psychic is available to us. See, this kind of, you know, formulation I have encountered on two sides of the divide. One is the so-called New Age people.
Yeah, I was just thinking that. Yeah,
yeah, those who turn towards Sri Aurobindo's yoga, they start mouthing this kind of idea that the psychic is very readily available to us. And they kind of act as if the psychic is you know, already at their beck and call. And the other is the people on the other side of the fence, the Sri Aurobindo devotees, who also start sort of feeling that because the repetition of the term psychic comes to such a point, one already starts feeling that they have achieved the psychic. The psychic transformation has been achieved. Now, usually as Kirit Joshi pointed out to me, that what many, many people in this yoga have mistaken is just a little bit of the psychic influence in some part of their being to be the full psychic transformation. Usually, he said, it's what is called the psychic enthusiasm, which is essentially a kind of action of the psychic in the heart center. Psychic enthusiasm is one of the most external and superficial aspects of psychic influence. But many people feel that they have had psychic emergence, psychic transformation, all kinds of things, just because of that. That leads to a tremendous amount of distortion, because very little of this completeness that Sri Aurobindo is talking about has been achieved. And at the same time, there is a sense that there is a kind of understanding of what the psychic wants, etc., etc. See, this is the other side of the danger. So both these dangers, one has to be very careful about the psychic, because psychic, that's why this chapter is so beautiful and important. He goes to such pains to bring to our notice that the psychic is the deepest part in us. It's not so easy for the psychic transformation. The psychic transformation comes with certain telltale aspects. Mainly this, that he points out, that every part of the nature becomes aware of the divine in its own way, in a special way, you see.
I think psychic enthusiasm is it's nice, but it seems to happen at the very beginning of people's sadhanas. I have good memories of this.
So there was just the previous, when you're saying this, the previous thing that you said about, like, you know, people who have had, probably you've had a little bit of experience, but take that to be the complete. And of that, and as a result of that, you start, believing that may not use the word avatar, but definitely believe, like go into the mode of being a teacher and such.
Sure.
So, Pondicherry was, I'm sorry, maybe it was me. I was a young man, 25 when I first went there. But honestly, I couldn't walk 20 feet without bumping into somebody that wanted to put their agenda on me, you know, about how, basically how great they were.
You survived.
Yeah, somehow, yeah.
So you had a question?
Well, not really. So I was saying, I guess the point that I was trying to clarify was that, so this is when you get into the mode of becoming a teacher and such, correct?
Right, exactly. Exactly. So, you see, the thing is that, that's one of the reasons why Sri Aurobindo and the mother have warned against the guru complex, you know, they're trying to become a guru in this yoga. But even apart from that, quite apart from that, I mean, even leaving aside this whole thing about wanting to become a teacher, actually, Kirit was talking about not the people who were wanting to become teachers. It was very interesting. I had a very interesting conversation with him. He was talking about, in fact, people who had, to some extent, determined the lines of the Sri Aurobindo International Center of Education. He was talking about people who continued as teachers over there in the, from the second generation. And he was saying that something stopped, you know, and this was his kind of interpretation at least. But he was saying also that essentially, you know, it takes a very fine discrimination. And the development of discrimination, which is a very patient thing that one has to give the time to settle before one can feel secure about what is the extent of the psychic emergence and what remains yet to be done. So that is a very important aspect of this yoga, to be very circumspect about with regard to the privacy of one's own, sadhana and one's own progress.
So I guess these are things that sooner or later everyone comes in contact with as a problem as he or she starts making some progress, right? I mean, I remember a long letter by Sri Aurobindo in which he talks about the intermediate zone. I guess this is not exactly the intermediate zone, but that kind of touches on the danger of, you know, being halfway there and thinking you're all the way there. I mean, to that extent, it's the same theme as this.
Yeah, no doubt. Intermediate zone also may be involved in exactly what he's talking about, in that, as he's saying, the subliminal ignorance, part of the subliminal ignorance is the intermediate zone.
The thing is also when a person has access to a certain bit of this knowledge, so to say, or the or even what you call the psychic enthusiasm, and sees around him or her other people with no such access, it is possible to get fooled into it, correct?
Oh yes, of course.
Because until then you are, probably you are safe in the ignorance prior to that.
Exactly. And it's not only possible, Cham, I think it is natural. I think a lot of people, and as you were saying, almost maybe everybody goes through movements of that kind. How much they express and how much they keep within themselves is another matter.
Oh, okay, beautiful.
Some are basically saved maybe by being less expressive in nature.
So their introvert nature may in turn make sure that it doesn't come out at the very least.
Come out, but maybe it's going on inside the head. Uh-huh. But you see, I think that's where the key is, sincerity. And, you know, as Kirit was saying, in kind of being very circumspect about allowing this perception of discrimination to settle. So if one is steady about that, one is, you know, imposes a certain kind of, rein on one's own understanding.
I remember, I think Sri Aurobindo, in one of the letters, he uses the expression a healthy skepticism.
Yeah, he does, yeah.
As what is required, right? Like, of,
yeah.
Jyoti, would you like to read the next one? This is the paragraph starting with, but all this change and all this experience.
Oh my God, it's such a long one. Oh, I'm so tired. Can somebody else do it?
I can go.
Thank you, sir.
But all this change and all this experience, though psychic and spiritual in essence and character, would still be in its parts of life effectuation on the mental, vital, and physical level. Its dynamic spiritual outcome would be a flowering of the soul in mind and life and body. But in act and form, it would be circumscribed within the limitations, however enlarged, uplift, and rarefied, of an inferior instrumentation. It would be a reflected and modified manifestation of things whose full reality, intensity, largeness, oneness, and diversity of truth and power and delight are above us, above mind, and therefore above any perfection, within mind's own formula of the foundations or superstructure of our present nature. A higher spiritual transformation must intervene on the psychic or psycho-spiritual change. The psychic movement inward to the inner being, the self or divinity within us, must be completed by an opening upward to a supreme spiritual status or a higher existence. This can be done by our opening into what is above us, by an ascent of consciousness into the ranges of overmind and supramental nature, in which the sense of self and spirit is ever unveiled and permanent, and in which the self-luminous instrumentation of the self and spirit is not restricted or divided, as in our mind nature, life nature, body nature. This also the psychic change makes possible, for as it opens us to the cosmic consciousness, now hidden from us by many walls of limiting individuality, so also it opens us to what is now superconscient to a normality, because it is hidden from us by a strong, hard and bright lid of mind, mind constricting, dividing and separative. Lid thins, is slit, breaks asunder or opens and disappears under the pressure of the psycho-spiritual change and the natural urge of the new spiritualized consciousness towards that of which it is an expression here. This effectuation of an aperture and its consequences may not at all take place if there is only a partial psychic emergence, satisfied with the expression of the divine reality in the normal degrees of the spiritualized mind. But if there is any awakening to the existence of these higher supernormal levels, then an aspiration towards them may break the lid or operate a rift in it. This may happen long before the psycho-spiritual change is complete, or even before it has well begun or proceeded far, because the psychic personality has become aware and has an eager concentration towards the superconscious. An early illumination from above or a rending of the upper velamen can come as an outcome of aspiration or some inner readiness, or it may even come uncalled for or not called for by any conscious part of the mind, perhaps by a secret subliminal necessity or by an action or pressure from the higher levels, by something which is felt as the touch of the divine being, the touch of the spirit, and its results can be exceedingly powerful. But if it is brought about by a premature pressure from below, it can be attended from with difficulties and dangers which are absent when the full psychic emergence precedes the first admission to the superior ranges of our spiritual evolution. The choice, however, does not always rest with our will, for the operations of the spiritual evolution in us are very various, and according to the line it has followed, will be the turn taken at any critical phase by the action of the consciousness force in its urge towards a higher self-manifestation and formation of our existence.
So, here he is preparing for the other transformations. And essentially, you know, it relates to your question, Vince, about the psychic transformation and the overmental and supramental transformations. The psychic transformation is one which acts at our level. That is why what it brings is the psychic psychicization of mind, life, and body. So that the natural instruments that we have become adapted to a new kind of perception and a new kind of action. But this perception and action is still limited. It's still, the instrumentality is still not the fullness of the divine reality. It's not something which can actually give the kind of responses that are demanded of the fullness of spirit. So this is where you find that, because even the transformation that can take place is a transformation that is constrained within the avidya. Avidya has prepared in its evolution these particular levels of consciousness in us. And these levels of consciousness can be psychicized, but still have to work under the constraints of what has been evolved so far. See, so this is where he is pointing out that it's necessary to open up something else, something higher, a more native action, an uncompromised action of spirit, which is yet unmanifest. At its heights, it is that which has manifested our world. Therefore, it's the avidya prakriti which at its root is the overmind. So, firstly, to bring that into it, that, you know, at one place he calls it vidya avidya shakti. That is, it is, you know, at its absolute heights, it is mediating between the vidya and the avidya. So, to bring that into action brings a new power of transformation into nature, and to go even further and bring the supramental shakti into action completely transforms the nature into the divine nature, into something adequate to the divine. So now he opens up this issue of how is that possible. And this is a very interesting way he brings it out. So he says that, again, this is partly the reason why the fullness of the psychic emergence is so important. Because the psychic being in its full emergence automatically brings into us the aspiration towards the superconscient heights. So that is one way, that when the psychic emerges in its fullness, it is not satisfied. You see, this is a big question in spirituality. That is, if we have a certain realization, can we get stuck there? And it does happen. I mean, that's the reason why we have so many different religions. Because people do arrive at a certain realization and then take that to be the very reality of God. But they're stuck there. Now, that's why we brought up the whole issue of adhikar. But if the psychic emerges in its fullness, then that possibility of getting stuck will not be there, because it automatically brings in its own intuitive memory of the action of the divine. That is what causes aspiration towards the superconscious to take place. Now, then he goes into this fascinating part of the paragraph, where essentially he points out that there are a variety of other ways in which the same thing may happen. That is, even before the psychic emerges, the higher planes may open up. The superconscious might start acting or being experienced. And that happens because there is either a subliminal aspiration or a direct action from above which rends the lid or there is some kind of partial action of the psychic being that is causing this to happen even without our surface knowing about it. So all these possibilities, as he's saying, are there. The kind of sequence which one might call linear would involve the emergence, full emergence of the psychic being and the turning of the being towards the higher and superconscient planes. But as he points out towards the end of the paragraph, that every individual is different and our evolutionary needs are different, what we have already developed is different, and it's very possible that in certain cases, even without the psychic fully emerging, the higher planes might attract us, and those planes might start opening up, and there might be the experiences or descents from above that take place. In discussing this, again, for the first time, he's actually invoking this idea of the yoga shakti, which I was talking about. The yoga shakti, which is, he talks about right at the end, the choice, however, does not always rest with our will, for the operations of the spiritual evolution in us are very various. Mm-hmm. And according to the line it has followed, will be the turn taken at any critical phase by the action of the consciousness force in its urge towards a higher self-manifestation and formation of our existence. That action of consciousness force is the yoga shakti, which actually determines what will be the specific realizations that we will go through.
When you say it's the first time that he's mentioning the yoga shakti, doesn't he talk about that a lot in the synthesis of yoga?
No, indeed he does. No, I mean, in this particular chapter, I mean,
okay,
talking about the triple transformation and, you know, the spiritual realizations that take place, that indeed, you know, in Sri Aurobindo's sort of elaboration, the yoga shakti is the central power. But he brings it out over here for the first time, as it were.
Okay. It's a great chapter, gosh.
Yeah, no, it's one of the most powerful chapters of this book, in fact.
Can I read the next one?
Sure, go ahead. Go ahead.
Sure.
If the rift in the lid of mind is made, what happens is an opening of vision to something above us, or a rising up towards it, or a descent of its powers into our being. What we see by the opening of vision is an infinity above us, an eternal presence or an infinite existence, an infinity of consciousness, an infinity of bliss, a boundless self, a boundless light, a boundless power, a boundless ecstasy. It may be that for a long time, all that is obtained is the occasional, a frequent, a constant vision of it in a longing and an aspiration, but without anything further. Because although something in the mind, heart, or other part of the being has opened to this experience, the lower nature as a whole is too heavy and obscure as yet for more. But there may be, instead of this first wide awareness from below, or subsequently to it, an ascension of the mind to heights above, the nature of these heights we may not know or clearly discern, but some consequence of the ascent is felt. There is often, too, awareness of infinite ascension and return, but no record or translation of that higher state. This is because it has been superconscious to mind, and therefore mind, when it rises into it, is unable at first to retain there its power of conscious discernment and defining experience. But when this power begins to awake and act, when mind becomes by degrees conscious in what was to it superconscient, then there begins a knowledge and experience of superior planes of existence. The experience is in accord with that which is brought to us by the first opening of vision. The mind rises into a higher plane of pure self, silent, tranquil, illimitable, or it rises into regions of light or of felicity, or into planes where it feels an infinite power or a divine presence, or experiences the contact of a divine love or beauty, or the atmosphere of a wider and greater and luminous knowledge. In the return, the spiritual impression abides, but the mental record is often blurred and remains as a vague or a fragmentary memory of lower consciousness from which the ascent took place, falls back to what it was, with only the addition of an unkept or a remembered but no longer dynamic experience. In time, the ascent comes to be made at will, and the consciousness brings back and retains some effect or some gain of its temporary sojourn in these higher countries of the spirit. These ascents take place for many in trance, but are perfectly possible in a concentration of the waking consciousness, or where that consciousness has become sufficiently psychic. At any unconcentrated moment, by an upward attraction or affinity. But these two types of contact with the superconscious, though they can be powerfully illuminating, ecstatic, or liberating, are by themselves insufficiently effective. For the full spiritual transformation, more is needed. A permanent ascension from the lower into the higher consciousness, and an effectual permanent descent of the higher into the lower nature.
So, here he's beginning to talk about the other two transformations, and they proceed with the opening to the spiritual realms above the mind. And so he points out that at first, it may only be a contact in vision. The term vision over here is not just or only vision of the eyes. By vision is meant a kind of concrete sense that there is a entry, as it were, into the sense of the infinity of this reality. So experiences of that kind, where one knows of its existence, as it were from within the mind or from above the mind, a kind of intuition or wisher by intuition is not made a mental construct, but a concrete contact, contact with the reality of this infinity may take place. Now, what Sri Aurobindo is talking over here is very interesting because it relates to his notion of Sushupti. Sushupti is usually taken to be the third condition avastha of dreamless sleep. And in that condition, it is supposed that one enters into superconscious realms and is absorbed into them. Now, Sri Aurobindo's interpretation of this is that that particular absorption arises because the formation of retaining its experience has not yet been developed. The borders of Sushupti are meant to be constantly pushed further. So here, he talks about the process or the stages in our entry into the reality of these planes above mind. At first, they must develop in us a sense of feel for the infinity above. This is partly the reason why Sri Aurobindo has talked about the use of poetry, for example. I think there's a lot of noise coming from somewhere.
Oops, I'm sorry, I probably have it muted.
So Sri Aurobindo speaks about the power of overmental poetry. And that, like Savitri, for example, and the real thing there is to open our inner mental consciousness to the sense of infinity that is there in those lines, the atmosphere from which they come. That can be an initial contact, which gives us that vision he's talking about, a vision of contact with those planes, a concrete sense of the wideness and infinity of the higher mental planes, particularly the overmind. Now, as that sense becomes more settled in us, a part of our higher consciousness, mental consciousness, starts opening to it, becoming receptive to it. Now, what he's pointing out is in the stages or phases, there may be invisible ascents into these higher planes and returns, in some cases without our even knowing it. In some cases with our knowledge of the entry into these higher planes, but without retaining anything. We have no idea what happened. In some cases in states of trance, in meditation, there is a sense of entering into some great light, but not any concrete idea, and one returns, there is a certain gap in the memory, as it were. So these are all stages of entry into these higher planes. But Sri Aurobindo is pointing out that with experience and with faith, one begins to regularize this possibility. Now he's also saying that it can come to a point where one can, with a concentration of the mind, at will enter into these planes. So then one is what one might call a traveler of the worlds. Now the other part that he's bringing out is that this aspect of traveling is brought to a much greater fulfillment with the full emergence of the psychic being. If the being is psychicized, then it is rendered so plastic to the divine consciousness that there can be automatic ascents without even concentrating on it. There is this very smooth movement from our state to a higher state. Now, this kind of achievement is also a very high achievement. And there are many mystics of a very high order that have attained this kind of statement that he's talking about. Where cosmic consciousness is almost at one's beck and call. One enters and descends. Even one may think of people like Sri Ramakrishna, who were in this kind of state. But he's saying that if we are to enter into a full transformation of the nature, there has to be a radical sort of step from this point. And that step is to change the center of our existence completely to that particular Purusha. So here we find that each one of these, this triple, so-called triple transformation, is accompanied by changing, a progressive changing of the center of our existence. What might be called the central being is the central aspect in question. Where is the central being? Who is the central being? From the ego to one of the Purushas, from the Purusha to the psychic being, from the psychic being to the overmental being, from the overmental being to the supramental being. The change of center is the decisive step. So only when that can take place, can there be the next stage of the second transformation. As he's saying, for the full spiritual transformation, more is needed. A permanent ascension from the lower into the higher consciousness. And then, if one settles one's consciousness there, makes that the center of the being, a transformation of the remainder of the being, by that, by the power, the shakti of that being, that Purusha. So, that is affected by the descent, effectual permanent descent of the higher into the lower nature.
Debashish?
Yeah.
I have one question. In this riding above, and how is the rising above, the old mental, how is that connected to the centers, to chakras? You know, I always think of the... Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, finish what you were saying, Vince. You said, well, I always think of...
Well, I always connect the psychic being with the heart center and rising above to the, you know, the chakra above your head. But how does that coincide with what you were saying about, it sounds like it's there, somewhere in there. I mean, how does it coincide with what you're talking about? Or how?
Yeah. So, you see, what happens, Vince, is that the crown chakra, the chakra above the crown of the head,
right,
that what is called the thousand-petal lotus, okay,
yes,
that is the one that is developed in us at present. And that, basically that chakra, one might call it a higher mind chakra. But that contains within itself the possibility of rising into the overmind and even beyond it to the supermind. So it is the access point. The crown chakra is the access point from where there can be a rise to or different aspects or different potencies of that particular chakra can open up for us the overmind and the supermind. Now, technically speaking, the evolution has prepared in us these centers of operation. The overmind is not something which has been fully developed in us. That's the reason why there is what he's talking about, this kind of a gap even to enter into the crown chakra, there is a Sushupti. Crown chakra is the center of Sushupti, in fact. There is a sinking into a dreamless sleep. But as one regularizes, that's why he's saying that there is a process. We cannot be satisfied with it. There has to be an attempt to bridge the gap. That is, enter into the subconscious realms without losing consciousness. And then, one, essentially through what the process he's talking about over here, one develops new centers. You see, the crown chakra is what nature has given us. But the overmental and supramental centers lie further above the crown chakra. They have to be developed in us. That's why this yoga involves an extension of the subtle body, of the subtle anatomy. We create a new body for ourselves, as it were. And part of that work is exactly what he's talking about over here.
Well, thank you. It's like an extension of your consciousness.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Shall we stop for today, being 9:35?
Yeah, sure. Well, thank you, Debashis. Yeah, that was just a wonderful chapter, wonderful explanation.
Yeah, very enjoyable.
I agree. That was really phenomenal. Thank you.
Thanks. Very nice. Thank you. Okay,
we'll
get together next week.
So, just a quick question. I mean, I don't know how free you are on December 5th. Are you able to do something on December 5th?
Hello?
Devashishda, is Sham here?
Yeah.
I was just wondering if you are able to organize something for December 5th morning.
Yeah, is this Saturday?
Yeah, only if you are free and you're able to. So if then we can try to do something.
I think, because we did that thing on Arogya.
Sure.
I think that was basically geared towards the fifth as well.
Okay, sure, sure.
So you know, I think we'll just meditate by ourselves.
Sure, so we'll continue next Thursday then.
Yeah.
Okay, let's stop with a brief meditation.
Oh.